I don't think the commission knew. The commission was really feeling out the public as to which way it should go.
John, I'd like to make a comment on that. I'm Jack Prentice with the Fisheries Commission, and people have been concerned that the fishermen didn't know in advance that participating would allow them to get points, but I think that's kind of taking the wrong tack, because the way the commission did it, people who were already fishing just to make a living at it would have gotten the points. And if they had, say, decided in 76 to let it go until 78 or something, then people who wanted to get a permit just for speculation could have come in and fished just for that reason. So the way that it was done, if anything, tended to favor the people who were already fishing for a living and as a way of life.
I don't think there was much speculation here. These people are fishing for a living.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
The people have, and they have a right to that fish for a living. And the whole thing is based here. This is like the refereeing of a basketball game. They make the rules after the game is played. They're coming behind after all of this, and then laying out the rules, what should have been done 4 or 5 years ago. This, in 1974, the word, I spent quite a bit of time here, and the word here with the people, would limited entry would never be in Unalakleet. Am I not right? I heard it from many people. And then 1976, bingo. The gates are closed. Everything's all, game's all over. The good last was with love. People are out.
I think what Mr. Foote is saying is, you're saying that ideally it should have been that way, but like what Mary Ann was saying, she had no idea. She's got 3 sons that want permits. Now, if she had been following the letter of the law, all of her sons would have permits. Same as Steve here. He would have a permit now. If he had known prior to that point that would be the restriction on him.
They wouldn't act just as helpers. They would have gone off and gone here if they had to beg, borrow, or steal to get that money to get the gear. They'd have gotten. And at the time, our fisheries were just developing. We were getting 6 cents a pound for pinks and 25 cents a pound for kings. They were just coming in then. We didn't have big buyers like we do now. It was just developing here. So.
Seems to me that everything that I've heard about, seems to me that everything I've heard about the limit of entry permits here in Norton Sound, they don't apply the same as in the rest of Alaska. It's the idea that it seems to me that the commission here is protecting the fishery and not protecting the Aboriginal, as Harold and Clarence were saying, is that it's going about it the wrong way. It's protecting an investment rather than protecting the Aboriginal who is working as fishing as a living. You're not giving him the opportunity now to decide that would be his livelihood, whereas it was prior to that, John.
The decision-making process was exactly the opposite of that, though. In 1973, the Limited Entry Act was passed, and right in the act it said that the last year that will count for the original salmon fisheries that were limited on the Gulf of Alaska and Southeast would be 1972. And it wasn't until 1975 that the commission finally finished the application process for the original 19 fisheries. Okay, the only fisheries that remained open at that time, the only salmon fisheries, were the Yukon River, Kuskokwim River, Norton Sound, Kotzebue Sound, and the hand troll fishery in Southeast Alaska. But the power troll fishery was limited. All other salmon fisheries were limited.
Everybody
who wanted to fish salmon and didn't get a permit in those other fisheries was obviously going to be moving into these areas. There was nothing that could possibly have kept them out. For example, on the Upper Yukon River, you think that your fishery was just developing. That fishery was very, very new in 1975. However, the pipeline was winding down in 1975. A number of people were in Fairbanks and out of work. We fully anticipated that a number of those people would have purchased commercial licenses and gone out on the river. They were not local people. Consequently, Upper Yukon fishery was limited at the same time as all other AYK fisheries for the reason that those people who were involved in it were the people that were local people and were dependent upon it, not newcomers who just came off the pipeline and were unemployed and decided to go fishing. like I say, the whole decision-making process for the AYK has been to try to make sure that these people are protected from an onslaught of outside people coming in and fishing.
Right, but John, why wasn't the law, especially here in Norton Sound, why wasn't the letter of the law designed to protect the people who live in the area here rather than protecting a limited amount of permits? Like, why didn't you limit technique? Like, going back to the first question that I asked, the idea that 195 is all there's ever going to be allowed as far as permits, so that, like, if Unalakleet doubles in population, there's never going to be another permit allowed, because what's going to happen, you're going to get more aggressive fishermen with higher techniques, better skills, you're going to get big trawlers here. But why not limit the Aboriginals to a certain method of fishing, which would ensure the development of the salmon crop, which is the prime purpose of the commission? Why wasn't that concept rather than the other concept adopted?
I think, Bob, what we got to do today, we can talk over the philosophies of what happened, but what I want to get is individual and village problems of what's going on right now. I understand where you're coming from, and maybe we can discuss that, but that gentleman right there has been waiting for a long time, so I want him to have his say.
Full-time fisherman, fished in Bristol Bay, and also in North Sound. And what I have to say is actually apply to what you're discussing here, but the point I think that may help the caller to give out a few more permits in this area. I've known fish and fishing all my life, I've done it all my life, and I observed quite often as to what fish are and where they go. And I know what Cape Denby, make it short, I feel that there's a milling area there for salmon species from different rivers. And that area is kept open to the shackleton fishermen. Not that I want to hurt shackleton fishing in any way, but I feel that some of our fish for rivers, the streams further down this way, mill around that cape there, right there in the point there. And I think that if there was extensive studies made as to where the fish go from there, by maybe possibly by tagging, we'd probably find a lot of the fish that are caught up there by other fishermen going here to the Unalakleet watershed. And this is where I feel that if this is true, we'd be able to give out a few more permits. And I suggest our representative here have the fishing game make extensive studies in the cape there. Thank you.
Thank you, Morse. As you know, the fishing game got cut considerably this year, and I can assure you that the Bush Caucus anyway is going to put some effort into getting more money in the coffers for fishing game next year, because especially in our area here, with the salmon and the herring, we don't know very much about it, and we've got to get some biologists out there. This lady has been waiting for a long time.
I'm not a fisherman, but I'm I'm the mother and grandmother of over 40. So if I have a permit, who would I give that, my permit, to one of my grandchildren? It would be a very hard decision, because they all the children now go to high school. I just went to eighth grade. And after high school, they go to college. Now, how many of my grandchildren went to college, going to college this fall? Ella is my granddaughter, and Mary Ann is my daughter, and Betty here, and my cousin Ruthie, she has how many boys? Four boys? Eight boys. Now, their dad has permit. Which one would he? To me, for my understanding, when they had voted, they were blinded. I have been many times judges in voting area when they have, and a lot of people didn't understand that permit. They think it would be everybody that wants to fish in Unalakleet would have their permit, not other people come from other places. So So they wouldn't get permit from come and fish here. They thought, this is there. I was raised here and born. And then, to my understanding, it was just, well, the father has small ones. He has a permit. And it, Jack Fuller, your representative, I want that written down. It should be issued down to their children. The father, if he has a permit, let his sons have permits too. Because we're just like a grass growing each time. I'm going to go pretty soon, just like my grass dies, leaves outside, young ones come every year. And the fathers that have permits will be gone. And now, to my understanding, it's given to just one son. And that son will give it to his son. What about the rest? So that's what I come to ask. Because I was raised here, if I tell you a little back story, my grandmother had only 5-fathom fish net, and she don't have no boat. I used to stay with her. She had a long pole and no like this, and she would just stick it out and pull it out. And when it catch, pull that thing and take the fish out. And no boats. We used to wade across that old slough to go fish ferries. Now boats all over. When my children went to Mount Inchcombe, we had to put here and there. Money was very scarce. I would put a dollar here. We had to pay their fare. Now government is taking care of them back and forth. I should think, that's why I come to ask, they should give them more permits here. Young people need it. There wouldn't be too many drugs or drinking. If they have something to do, I know lots of young boys like to go fishing, but nothing to do, no jobs. And that's why I came. I came to say something, but it has been in my mind. The father that has permit, why it would be right for me to just give them all the boys or give them permits. The one have the family that have permits, give their children permits. Because we're not going to live here, all of us, all the time. But if the fishing will be going and going, year by year. And I'm thankful for you folks. I'm very busy. I let my things. I had this in mind for many. When I see young boys, I had seen these people are most of all my relatives. Some couldn't get permits. I was burned. It grieves me, really, when they couldn't get their permits. They'd be fishing and they were short few points and then couldn't go. I know one time, if I mention, you wouldn't mind, Eddie, she had 7 points. And one day he get about 100 king salmon. They had to cook, work, and make strips. Oh, I was very sad. They needed that, but others can sell, have permits. And there were others like Stevie and other boys. They couldn't get their permits. But I hope this will work better. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Herbert, I think you were before Paul.
My question is in regards to the people who just found out now that they might be eligible for additional points. Like if they were in the services or they knew that, they find out they can have additional points. Is there a time that they can submit to the commission to obtain these additional points?
Everybody who had made application to the commission for an AYK permit received a letter during spring or summer of 1978 telling them that they should get all of their evidence in before September 1st, 1978. And if they could not, for some reason, that they should notify us as to what that reason was and tell us basically what they had to do to get their evidence and tell us how long it was going to take them. So the answer to your question is, for most people, the evidence period is over, except for people who have been granted extensions or who are in a hearing process. However, if you know someone or you yourself have received some information today that clarifies a situation and gives you some indication of how to get additional points, you can write to the commission and ask for an evidentiary period. We will send you back a form letter that asks you a number of questions. Why you didn't get it in before? Why you didn't request an extension earlier? What evidence are you going after? Who has it? How long is it going to take you to get it? I mean, if it's a legitimate request to try to get more information to us, and not just an effort to try to get an interim use permit for a particular year, we'll typically grant that, and will until such time as we get ready to close down this fishery. That's not happening right now. Close it down, I mean, issue all the final permits. So if you do want to get more additional evidence into us, write us and tell us. You'll have to answer a number of questions before we'll allow you to send in more evidence. But if it's legitimate, hopefully you shouldn't mind that.
I have one more question. In regards to the new law that was signed by by Governor Hammond in regards to pulling up points, could you explain that just briefly, please?
Yeah. That piece of legislation was not sponsored by the commission, although we did not oppose it. The legislation says that those fisheries that were originally limited in 1975, which does not include AYK, if you had fished the same type of gear but in different areas, in other words, if you drift netted in Southeastern and drift netted in Prince William Sound, and you had made application for both of those fisheries, but you had not accumulated sufficient points to get a permit in either, then you could pool your points from the two different areas or three different areas. And if you finally got enough points by pooling to reach a 20-point level, then 20 points was the same for those fisheries as 10 points is for this fishery up here. It's just a different threshold. If you finally could pool those points to get 20 points, then we could give you a permit. Had to be the same type of gear, same species, different areas, and you had to have applied for them.
Now, if that wasn't introduced by the commission, may I ask who introduced that for that particular area?
Yeah, well, it was introduced by Representative Gardner, as I recall. I think Representative Fuller intends to, I may be putting words in your mouth, Jack, his staff has told me anyway that he intends to introduce legislation next year to amend it to allow for the same procedure to apply to the AYK. And if that's true, the commission will not oppose it. We will go along with it. It seems only fair. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for you.
Paul was next. Paul was next, and I got you marked down there.
One of the one of the items that Mary Ann brought up earlier, which I don't think was answered there, and that pertained to the helper's permit. Now, why did not the commission issue any points to helper's permit during that point system collecting years?
I'm not sure I know the total answer to that, but what I do, and Ron, if you have some other comments, maybe you ought to start, and I'll... Okay. It was my understanding that that the commission could determine in 1975 was that most people up here, especially in the set net fisheries, usually fish their own gear and would have children possibly help them. But it was very, very common for both the husband and wife to both have permits and to fish their own gear. It was obviously beneficial to them because the more permits you have, the more fathoms of gear you could put out. So consequently, because the whole point system was on a much smaller scale than the initial salmon fisheries, they didn't use some of the same criteria for the AYK that they did before, simply because they felt it was not as appropriate. For example, they didn't count crewman points up here. They didn't count consistency points, which they had used in the other fisheries, meaning if you'd fished more than some number of weeks in a particular year, you got additional points beyond just participation points. It was just felt that, it was hoped that every point system would be formed to apply to that particular area. It was a decision that not to credit crewman points. That's not a very good answer.
I'm a fisherman, and when we first commercial fish here, we were fishing for example for the buyers, you know, of companies, and they never issue us permit for us. And then I had some fellow fishermen that was one short point for permit, and then After that, I see new faces. Some white people are fishing today, but I never used to see fishermen out in the water. Now the game warden, Stephen Ron, and Robin Oswald was first by here, and they said they allowed us to use only 100 pound of net, not to use 150 shackles net, because we had a small skiff and keep out the outside fishermen fishing here so they wouldn't come here with the big gear and take our fish away from here. Listen, I've been here. This is a big deal. When I christened Gay Morgan in Grotto, christened me, what time to go out fishing here, and I tell them we stay out here in the water. Springtime, we like to be out in the outdoors. And we get sleepy. And I put it 6 o'clock open. And we get fish in the morning, and afternoon we get storm, and we had people have chance to pick up their net after storm flight time. So they asked me for this. So I, before this regulation, fishing regulation issue, and then why didn't they come here? Just when they started commercial fish for the sample for that company. You guys have been here that time. Now while they're 1 point short is hurt, being fishermen not to get something. Now you guys are here, just what it's already done. I thank you and try to pass this forward.
I'm sorry, before I leave, I have one more thing. My son Alfred and I was fishing, but I think before day I didn't know, but he was called to the service and went to Vietnam, and I don't think he has permit now. I've been wondering about that too. I think he'd been fishing before this permit deal were. That's a younger son of mine, and he's, but they do about when they're in service.
What is his name?
Alfred A. Nano. He's now at Coxville. You know, he was here yesterday. If I had no, I didn't see him, I would have let him stay overnight. And then this year too, like Roger had 3 sons. He was very sick when the fishing season opened, so he had emergency transferred to one of his sons. And they all wanted to go to college, and one had it, and one was helper, and then one tried to be a helper. They're going to college. You know, we like to see our young people go to high schools and college, and further they go, happier we are. And they can't go without money. That fishing helps them. That's, they try and fish best they can, many young people, but to try and be helpers too. That's something to think about too. So if there's a, you know, issue more in permits, I think those, you know, we like to see our children independent, and that's one of the good lessons too. And fishing is hard work. So thank you again. I've talked too much maybe.
Thank you very much. I would hope that sometime before that we leave town, we could have a chance to talk with you some more.
Okay, if I have time, I'll try and come. Are you going to stay tomorrow too?
We're leaving tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, okay. Maybe if I can, if I have time. My husband he's been sick since 1964, and all this, you know, people has blessed this Yuncleet with fish. Ever since I can remember, down the coast, up the river, and we haven't gone hungry yet. And many people, he hasn't gone hunting since 1964. He had stroke on both sides and cancer kidney removed. But God has blessed us. Many, many blessings. Our table is overflowing through people. God's channel of blessing comes to us. We praise and thank the Lord for everything and for you people too. May God bless you all.
Thank you.
One thing I'd like to make clear to our community, like I said a while ago, I went through practically all doors seeking for my entry permit. And I tried one angle. That was my last try. I wrote to the commissioner in Juneau about my condition. I made that clear in English on a piece of paper. I worked in the pipeline. In fact, I was a union member. But I found out I wasn't a journeyman carpenter. I was just a roof carpenter. So I couldn't go out and hire out as a carpenter. Full-fledged carpenter. So in that letter, I made it clear that I'd like to go fishing. That was my livelihood. That was my livelihood. My fishing is my livelihood. That's the only thing I'm good at. I made that clear to Mr. Simons, commissioner at the time, and yet I was still denied. They had denied me from my livelihood, my summer surrounding, and I don't think anywhere in this world, anywhere in this American way of life, a man should be deprived of his living, especially if he's asking to go to work for his living, be denied by it. There's one thing I'd like to make clear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You want to take further comments, or do you want to let the individual?
We want to go through these forms at some point, yeah.
So maybe we should.
There'll be a lot of questions on those.
Yeah. Maybe we should just.
Jack, just one final question to the study group. What are the chances of having AOIK Norton Sound fishery limitation permit changed?
I really couldn't answer that. In terms of the number of permits.
Number of permits, designation of permits?
Yeah, I really couldn't answer that. We're looking at a lot of different alternatives, but you run into so many problems that we can't say at this point how it's going to end up because we have to sort through all of them still. Ella went through them and mentioned some of the ones we're looking at, but I really just can't say off the top of my head what the chances are. I'm sure that if some changes are considered, the public will be involved in that again to make sure that the public does in fact want those changes, because there are going to have to be some compromises made in these, and something is going to have to be given up to get some advantages. So I would hope that the legislature will solicit public input when that time comes.
What further leverage do these people have with you?
Well, the leverage they will have will be after Jack Fuller and his other committee members have a chance to look these over and decide which ones they would support. Then I'm hoping that they will get back to people either through these hearings or through a mail program to get your input.
Their procedure involves a very complicated legal analysis. Clearly, the things that we'd like to do, we and everybody else, the commission and everybody else, are clearly prohibited by the Constitution. You can't just say people from Norton Sound can fish in Norton Sound and nobody else can. You just can't do that. So if they're going to do some legislative amending, they've got a number of considerations to take into account besides just social considerations. They've got legal and economic considerations. The big concern, or one of the largest concerns, seems to be about transferability, the fact that there's only one permit and that it's saleable on the open market. An alternative to that is to have an apprenticeship program so that when someone quits fishing, either because he retires or because he doesn't fish for a year or two, he loses his permit, reverts back to the state, and the state then issues it to somebody who has qualified himself through the apprenticeship program, or through an apprenticeship program of some sort or another. The apprenticeship program has a number of advantages. The value of the permit is removed. You can't sell it. The only way it transfers is through the commission. It does allow young people to get into the fishery, to earn points through an apprenticeship scheme to get in. However, the significant disadvantage of an apprenticeship program, I think there are two. The one that would most concern you is that you as a permit holder cannot decide the fate of your permit. If you wanted to give it to your son, you couldn't. You alone had to fish it until it went back to the state. The other problem that we have, as the administrative agency, the problem we have with an apprenticeship program is that we then have to act as big brother to everyone for the entire history of their fishing lives. We have to know when every crewman has fished, where he fished, in other words, to keep track of his qualifications for a permit once one becomes available. Now, clearly, the free transferability and apprenticeship programs both have bad and good aspects, and they're both probably legal. So it's up to the people to decide, basically.
We create another new bureau, huh?
You bet.
Another layer of bureaucracy. Roger, I think you had a question.
That young people want that are underage here in the community to work with Donald. I do have three sons. Underage at the time, prior to 1975. They're nowadays, but they do like to fish. And my question is, did the board consider the young kids, young boys, and young girls, and is there any possible way if they don't get enough permission from some sort, or what is on the blind, or they wipe off the map, or some sort, that they do not have the opportunity that the older fishermen do have? Like a lot of young men here, they didn't have the opportunity of fishing quite yet. Now they're all cut off. And there is no employment here in Europe, which would cover all the young men and all the young women. So my main question was, were they considered at the time when the point system was being worked on?
First thing I'd like to say is that in 1975 and before that, there was no minimum age for getting a commercial license. Anybody?
At that time, the young kids do not have no financial credit or something like that. They cannot go out there and get their own gear license and get their own boats and motors. The only thing they can do is get comfort from it, because nobody in the right back of mind with gambling and motor and boat and some gear, which would cost several $1,000. For the first time, those kids are out going up the kids were out.
Well, perhaps the comment is a technical one, but I do know that in Bristol Bay, for example, the commission issued permits through the application process to some very young individuals who set
that. Bristol Bay, they've been fishing down there since I was a teenager, even before.
Yeah.
Here, we were just done. And nobody here knew anything about the point system or fishing. And it was just starting in 60 or something like that.
The answer to the question, or at least the answer that I can think of, is the answer to why is there limited entry. It is a program that looks to the future. It looks to the past to try to predict the future. And the past tells us that anytime there is a commercial fishery and there is no limitation on who can get into that fishery, then when it is fully developed, there will be so many people in it, time and time and time again through history, there'll be so many people in it that the only guarantee you have is a guarantee to go broke or not make any money. Simply because so long as there are any profits to be made, those profits will attract new entrants.
new people will want to get into that fishery. And so the level of investment in that fishery finally rises to the point that it blanks out all profits that exist. This is a very abstract answer, but that's why limited entry is in existence in Alaska. It's because they wanted to keep the effort down to a level that would assure that people could make money fishing and would assure that the stocks would not be decimated.
And I'd like to see this. Why didn't the board give those young men a chance to get a permit or something like that so they could come out? They were underage at the time. It's not their fault that they missed out on having that emphasis. They were children by the time they're of age.
Right.
Why can't they be given a chance to get a permit or something?
Well, you mean a chance as in an apprenticeship program? Where they earn points as apprentices to finally get a permit?
I don't know if the record says still a permit, or you feel license and stuff like that. Nobody here is a true, because they do away with the records. Because a lot of boys have. And I would think it would be more than right to have the young generation candidate or something for some short time. They were on the line. It's not their fault if the regulations were written.
If there is going to be in Norton County, then there is also going to be a finite number of permits, a limited number of permits, in this case 195. And the question is, how does an individual permit get from one person to another, for example, from a father to a son, or an uncle to a cousin, or whatever? And the answer that the legislature decided upon in 1973 was the one that allowed a fisherman the maximum flexibility to decide for himself who is going to get. The free transferability program. There are other systems that we've talked about, but if you want a system where all of your sons can get a permit, and you have three or four sons, then you cannot have limited entry. The two will not work together. You cannot have, for example, an apprenticeship program that gives everyone who ever approves as a crewman in that fishery a permit. The federal government tried that in Alaska in the 1950s, and it was thrown out of court. It's unconstitutional. It either has to be a finite number of permits, or there has to be an unlimited number of permits. It's one way or the other. I mentioned that hand trolling was the only fishery, now only salmon fishery in the state that's now unlimited. In 1975, when limitations started in the other fisheries, there were 1,030 hand trawlers in Southeast Alaska. This year, the commission sold nearly 5,000 permits for that fishing.
Yeah, but they're to take it as having
to be the hand.
The fishery
goes through a development phase. It goes through a development program, basically. It starts out as an experimental fishery. They're trying to develop markets. They're trying to develop efficient fishing techniques. Not a lot of money there, but eventually, when everything gets working, like the king crab fishery did in the 1950s, there are fantastic profits that can be realized. Those profits keep attracting more and more boats, more and more people, until eventually the investment in vessel and labor is so great that without limited entry in king crab, assuming that everything else stabilizes, the world consumption of it stabilizes, the biological characteristics stabilizes, you will see all the profits being completely absorbed in investment.
Okay. That's your herring industry. This is the first year that they came up. Okay, now, they took 750 tons off the Chateau de Cape Bendy. The first thing, the people of Chateau I don't even think they took 30 tons. 750 metric tons are off the sea of Indy. You know that's been a problem. We had a meeting here and tried to get the 50 days to shut off the 30 because we had already hit our total of 150 metric tons for Union Street. They left it open. We hit over 300 tons.
I didn't say that. I didn't say anything about it. But I will.
This is that we're going to
run all day tomorrow. The Herring workshop is going to be tomorrow. And this thing just got my head that on the radio. It's going to announce that the Herring meeting was going to be Tuesday, but it's tomorrow. There's been a problem with the radio. And this is exactly some of the stuff Willie's been working on. He's had me working on for the last 4 months. We're going to get right into this and talk about the stuff we've been doing and what we hope to continue to do. One thing that the people in Vista Bay are herring fishermen are waiting on down there. Yeah, that meeting is going to be 9 o'clock tomorrow at the Igloo. Thanks, sir. One thing about herring, though, it doesn't appear that it's going to go limited entry within the next couple of years up here. I guess if we could leave herring to the side or talk about it after the meeting and get back to camera questions.
I'd like to say one thing about herring. If limited entry survives, of course, and survives public sentiment, and the legislature doesn't veto it or throw it out or something, then the thing that you have to understand about limited entry is that it's based upon a grandfathering system. In other words, people who are already in that fishery prior to the time it's limited are going to initially get the permit. So if you're interested in a commercial herring fishery up here and you want the benefits of that commercial activity to stay within your city, then local people have to develop it. You can't let somebody else develop it and then expect us within the commission to try to get you guys permit if somebody else has been doing fishing. It's a grandfather system. If you've been in it, you can get grandfathered in. If you have never gotten into it, then you've got to buy your way into it later on.
John, why couldn't they say a region say there's 195 permits? Why couldn't they themselves decide what would be a healthy number of permits within the region? Rather than going to the state, like, why limit it to 195? Why not, if you take a look at it over the next 3 or 4 years, and 195 people get together and decide that they can support another 60 or 70 permits? Why couldn't they do that?
That's possible. It is possible. There is a provision in the law called an optimum number. There's a chapter on optimum numbers, which is distinct and separate from maximum numbers. When the commission first comes in and initiates a limitation program, like they did in Norton, they set a maximum number of permits. We're in the process now of trying to get everybody classified, get all the hearings held, get all the court cases over with, and get the thing closed out. Once that's done, then on a fishery-by-fishery basis, the commission will come back up here, and it will ask those commercial fishermen now, that are now limited into the fishery, how many permits they'd like to see. And typically, you would expect that they might say fewer than the maximum number. And we would do, with extensive survey and economic analysis techniques, plus biological input from the Department of Fish and Game, we have developed a methodology, pretty good methodology, for determining what an optimum number is. And if the local fishermen decide that they don't necessarily need to make, let's say, $15,000 or $10,000 a year, but they would be happy with more fishermen making $7,000 a year,
then the commission would certainly consider that. Again, so long as Fish and Game did not have any problems with management with higher numbers. But we come in and ask the fishermen that are now limited in, how much money do you want to make? How many years in 7 years do you want to make at least $20,000? How many years, how many years out of 10 would you like to make at least $20,000? We develop probability tables that will show a particular effort level based upon historical and historical management techniques.
I mean, I add something here. I think one thing that we should all consider, and I know Weaver's on to it already, is that we've got to have some kind of an organized force up here of fishermen. Down below in southeastern Bristol Bay, you've got these organizations, and they are powerful. They are really powerful, and they make the legislators listen. And we're going to have do the same thing up here. We're going to have some fishermen groups that are organized and can speak for the people in the area, what they want. Now we're all going at it individually. And we've got to get together, and we've got to have a force that can be counted on. And maybe Weaver might want to come in. I know he can start toward that.
Yeah, since I've attended these hearing meetings, and it doesn't have to do alone with herring, it also could be applied to salmon. We thought of forming our own advisory committee here for the region. Nome has a committee of their own for the Department of Fish and Game. They have a committee, but their prime function and the representatives are from Nome itself. They are nothing from the villages, and their prime function is crab, as you know. But we have other concerns. Just for a minute, okay? We have other concerns, and that concern relates to villages like Jack Felix, you know, Pete, and Stebbins, and St. Michael. And those people, or we do, don't have any say in them. So we're trying to form right now an advisory committee, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Advisory Committee for this area. We're looking at that now, besides other concerns. That's about all I have, but I do have a question for you about that.
I think you might find that there'll be some people in Nome that are interested too. As you put the point right on there, that whole gang is just a bunch of crabbers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got to talk about crab, herring, salmon, anything that is in the fishery.
Marine mammal.
Which one of you are? Jack Wood, representative.
I am.
Years ago, last fall, I was looking from you over there a lot when I heard about the representative. And I had a problem that time with you. When I was over there, when I go over there, you were there. I missed you. Now I see you. And you come. What can you come? I was going to ask you that time. You know, I had three boys. The older boy was, he was teach on 1 point. I can. I was going to ask you to take one of my points to make it a 10 point. That point. But he was a helper before the summer down at Yukon. And this summer, he's helped a lot with it. So, any fish for next year, you see, earn 1 point at a time.
You've got 9 points right now?
Not 10. Mm-hmm. So much ago. Now, this is the second time. He worked on, he was in the house.
activity, his fishing this year is not going to give him any more points. The last year for points was 1975. But with, he has 9 points for Norton Sound?
Yeah.
I cannot promise, but it, at this time, it appears very likely that persons with 9 points will finally, will eventually get a permanent permit. I'm not, if he has other point claims, other points that he could get that he has not yet been awarded by the commission, he should go after them and try to get them. He shouldn't wait and hope that 9 points does it. He should go after him.
Is he in town now?
Yeah.
When you went after the meeting, I could talk with you or your son about his application.
Weaver, I think you were next.
Yeah, it's going at the same point as what Seeley was talking about, and that's Mary Ann was talking about that, and that's with the helpers. They've been fishing all these years, but they just don't necessarily get the points. So is there a possibility, there's a possibility of them gaining points if they could show evidence that 30 to 60% of their catch of their livelihood was fishing. Just like if you do it in 1975, where you awarded the fisherman the permit holder, why not award it also to the helper, say? He's not getting any points at all, but he's fishing out there, his livelihood is out there, but he's not getting a damn point. So if he could show that maybe even 30% of his livelihood depends on fishing, why don't you award him a point or two, and 60% 2 points?
Are you talking about now or back in 1970s?
Right now.
Okay.
Or even then, you know, if they did it in that time where they were actually counting points, fine, how about doing that, right? You know, you could do it. And you could also maybe count now. But the fact that their livelihood depends on fishing, I think, should be taken into account very heavily.
With respect to right now, there is no reason under present law for the commission to issue points for fishing experience that you're getting now. If by some chance the legislature does decide to enact an apprenticeship program, then it seems highly likely that fishing experience now as a helper will eventually count towards your apprenticeship point. It seems natural that they would have the same point, same sort of a system for apprenticeship that they did for limitation.
Okay, can they do it for, say, when they were counting points until 1975?
No, the regulations that were adopted by the commission at that time did not award any points for crewman participation in the election.
I know that, but you could change, you know, those are regulations, but those regulations should be changed. Why can't it apply to somebody who depends on livelihood? Even though he is a helper, maybe he needs one or two points to make him qualify to get 10 points. You understand what I'm trying to say?
I see what you're saying. I do. And somebody else, I think you asked before, why crewman points weren't credited up here. And I don't know all of the reasons that the commission used to decide not to do that. I should have looked that up more carefully, I guess. It's not possible to now go back and do that, simply because we've been ranking everybody according to the particular system that was established. And it's not just, you know, how many points you got, it's how many points you have relative to everybody else. That's why there's a one-time application process. You have to get everybody's application in, and then rank order them from top to bottom and give the top 195 people permits. But we're almost done. And it would be impossible now to go back and change the rules and reshuffle the deck. People would lose permits perhaps, and other people would get more points. We can't change the rules of the game when the game's about over. That's what we're going to do.
Okay. So there's no hope at all for a helper. Is that what you say?
Not under present law, no.
But if this apprenticeship program came into effect, would that be a possibility?
Yes, clearly would.
What you're saying, John, is that we need a new ballgame after this one's completed.
Another transfer process, perhaps, in which apprenticeship does count.
And do I understand it right that down below in the Bristol Bay, or at least southeastern,
they have honored crew points. The regulations for the first 19 fisheries did have crewman participation points, and they didn't allow that in this area. No.
I have one other question. Okay, under the apprenticeship program, say with the helper, with the apprentice, once the guy retires from fishing and he transfers permit down to the apprentice, then that's it. The apprentice himself, although he has 8 or 9 points and it's possible for him to get that extra point, the apprentice himself will not get a permit of his own. One, if I understand, he'll get one that is transferred, is that right?
Right. It won't be the skipper of the boat giving his permit to his apprentice. It won't work that way. The only way it would legally work is to have, whenever a fisherman gets out of fishing, then his permit is taken from him, given to the state, and then whoever ranks the highest on the apprenticeship rolls would get that permit. That's the only fair way. It's the only legal, I don't know if it's fair, it's the only legal
way. You know what? What you're doing, in effect, is taking your permit away from, say, somebody who's got a permit to the family of two. You're taking that permit away, and then you say, I'm going to give it away for you. And he's going to have two sons that might or may not get the permit.
That's exactly why in 1973 the legislature passed the free transferability provisions of the Act. As the system is set up right now, you as a permit holder can decide who gets it. You want to give it to your son, that's your choice.
So next time it's going to be you that'll do it.
Under an apprenticeship
scheme. I'm not sure if they want that at all.
Under an apprenticeship scheme, we would do it. That's right.
Not if I have anything to do with it. I don't buy that at all. I think when you put it in the state hands, John, I'd like to pursue this a little farther. Is there any way that you could have an apprentice program that could be for area, and the people in that area could vote on having an apprentice program, say like Unicleet, okay? We got 100 fishermen here, and we put on 20 apprentices, okay? And when the time comes for them to get a permit, that area could determine what apprentice gets that permit.
Okay.
Huh?
Too much politics.
Yeah.
Too much local politics.
Well, I understand that part of it too. But it's a hell of a lot better than the state having it.
It's better than the state having it.
Yes. The only court decisions that we have that speak directly to that are a Supreme Court decision that came down before statehood, when the federal government set up a limited entry program in Karlik Lake, the Red Salmon Fishery on Kodiak Island. The regulations they adopted said that those people that have fished there before get permits. And then anybody who crews on a Karlik boat for 3 years also gets a permit. And the Supreme Court threw it out saying that you have created a closed class. You have created a class where the local people that are in the fishery get to decide who else gets to participate in that fishery. And that denies everyone else their constitutional right to have access to that fishery. So if there were an apprenticeship program for it to be legal, it would have to be larger than just Norton Sound. Otherwise, the Norton Sound fishermen would decide who their crewmen were, and those crewmen would be the only people eligible for permits. And I'm sure, Ron, why don't you talk to this also, but you would be creating an unconstitutional closed class. An apprenticeship scheme would have to be something broader than that. It would have to be broader than just Norton Sound.